Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Creative City Show, heard daily here from 9 to 10 a.m., where we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future, and along the way, discuss, debate, and envision the issues and themes critical to getting us there. Welcome, welcome. This is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia, sitting in for Zach Yenser. We've got a great show this hour. Urge you to stay tuned in. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call our live line using 520-790-2040. Let's get right into it. On October 3rd and 4th, a cross-borders town hall will take place in Hermosillo with participants engaged in discussions on how to improve and facilitate cross-border trade in the Arizona and Sonoran regions. Joining the Creative City Show this morning to share more about this special event, we have Patrick Welch, who is with the Jennings Strauss Law Firm, and Tara Jackson, the president of the Arizona Town Hall. Patrick and Tara, welcome to the Creative City Show.
Good morning. How are you?
Tara, let's start with you. Tell us more for our members who aren't, our listeners who aren't familiar with it. Tell us more about the mission of the Arizona Town Hall.
We're a nonprofit civic organization, and our mission is really about educating, engaging Arizonans and others, in this case, Mexicans, with how to address some of the most important issues facing us, and doing so in a way that builds consensus and creates solutions to those problems.
Well, I'll tell you, I have had the honor and frankly, I attended a town hall, and it was a learning experience. And really, you've got some great minds that come together with some different perspectives. And the policies that come out of these town halls are very, very strong. As I understand it, Tara, the idea for this cross-border town hall was the product of one of your previous town hall sessions, correct?
Absolutely right. Back in 2016, we had a statewide town hall here in Arizona, looking at not only the importance of our relationship with Mexico and specifically our neighboring state of Sonora. One of the recommendations that came out of all of the participants is that we should really take this conversation into Mexico to allow further discussion and interaction between Arizonans and Mexicans about how to further strengthen the business relationship and the ties that we have.
Now, Patrick, Jennings Strauss and Salmon has been a strong supporter, as I understand it, of the town hall, the Arizona town hall over the years. Specifically when it comes to this issue with cross-border trade in Mexico, I mean, you'd have to be asleep to not recognize how important and the value of maintaining and building these relationships, correct?
Yeah, I mean, the economic impact that the relationship has on Arizona is tremendous. I mean, if you look at statistics, as recently as the second quarter of 2019, you're seeing $2.1 billion of Arizona exports to Mexico. I mean, that's just a tremendous number. And quite frankly, the Arizona-Mexico relationship is such that Mexico is Arizona's number one trading. That just can't be understated enough.
And the money flows both ways, too. I mean, the amount of dollars that the Sonoran and even down through Sinaloa folks spend when they cross a border up here is also huge.
You're right. I mean, the amount of traffic that comes across our Arizona ports of entry on an annual basis is tremendous in terms of both person crossings and both vehicle crossings. You know, our numbers are up year on year. And, you know, the amount of money from a tourism perspective that's being spent here, whether it's people going to Flagstaff in the winter to enjoy skiing, whether it's to enjoy the beautiful parks that we have in Tucson or the cultural events that are in Tucson or in Phoenix, it's just a tremendous opportunity for cross-border dollars to be spent in the tourism industry here in Arizona as well.
Tara, can you expand on that a little bit? Because I tell you, I'm involved in economic development, very active over the years in international trade, particularly with Mexico. But for the average listener out there who may not be an exporter or may not be a manufacturer, can you just sort of explain to them how this really truly does impact all of us and sort of the trickle down and the impacts throughout the region, no matter what line of work you're in?
Absolutely. A lot of listeners may or may not know that most cities in Arizona, and even a large part of our state government revenue, come from sales tax. So if you're a city and you're smart about how to bring in revenue from outside sources, sales taxes from people outside of your community are one of the best ways to bring in revenues to support all those public institutions that are so important, whether it is schools, roads. Smart cities know that attracting Mexican visitors to spend money in their communities is an incredibly wise investment of time and resources, especially if you are targeting those tourists and welcoming them into your community to spend their dollars. That is one way it directly impacts every Arizonan.
Well, I tell you, you're really singing my tune, Tara, because the other added advantage of that is you've got the money coming in to fund projects and infrastructure in the community. But in most cases, I mean, yeah, they drive on the roads a little bit, but they're not going to our schools. They don't necessarily need to use our hospitals or our police officers. So it's really a double win. We're getting the money, but the expenditure is not going back to the folks spending it necessarily.
Exactly. And the revenue is coming from a source outside of your community. One example is the town of Marana, who built an outlet mall. If you go by that outlet mall, especially over the holidays, and look at the license plates, a large majority are from Mexico. So all the sales taxes from those sales are going directly to support that town, and they're coming from an outside source, not the citizens themselves, adding money into the revenue for the city that supports all of the residents.
Now, Patrick, we've got people, I think, hopefully excited about this idea. So tell us more about the details before we go to commercial break. This is October 3rd and 4th this year at the Hotel Lucerna in Hermosillo. What is the cost? How do people get registered? Can they still get registered, and can they still participate?
Well, they certainly can still register and still participate. We're looking for people who are certainly looking to engage cross-border, that want to bring a diverse perspective to the table. So we welcome anyone who'd like to come. We've had people from the private sector attend. We've had people from the public sector attend, nonprofit. We've had members of our local Native American tribes in the Arizona Sonoran regions participate. So it's a really diverse group of people that we're looking to bring to the table to get that great discussion going on. In terms of the cost, it's $150. Our event kicks off on Thursday evening with an icebreaker party, which is going to be held at Parque Heroína, which is a food truck park that will give attendees an opportunity to try a multitude of different Sonoran cuisines that I know has been promoted in the Tucson area through Visit Tucson in over the last couple of years with the culinary adventures that they've been promoting. Additionally, on October 4th, which is the Friday main event, we'll start off at about 8 o'clock in the morning. There'll be town hall style discussions throughout the day with a number of keynote speakers, including Elia Tello, who is the Consul General to the United States, that's based in Hermosillo. We have a terrific lineup of entrepreneurs who will also be talking about their personal experiences on what you need to do, what are best practices when you're looking to either go north as a Sonoran to invest in Arizona, or as an Arizonan looking to go south into Mexico. So it's a great lineup. We're really excited about it.
Patrick, you had me at food trucks.
Glad to hear you're a foodie as well. Tara and I are both big foodies too. So,
ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to delve into more details and kind of some ideas on what Tara and Patrick want to see coming out of this town hall. If you'd like more information or if you'd like to register, visit Arizona Town Hall or call the Arizona Town Hall office at 602-252-9600. This is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia, sitting in for Zach Yenser. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Creative City Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia, sitting in for Zach Yenser. This segment of the Creative City Show is sponsored by Vantage West and the Thrive Series. The Vantage West Thrive Series are 3 to 5 minute conversations with business leaders from diverse community organizations discussing the ins and outs of what it takes to run a successful business in Tucson and how being community-minded has helped them to be more competitive. From the Ignite Sign Art Museum to Barrio Bread and Hotel McCoy, you can watch the latest episodes by looking at vantagewest.org/thriveaz. Thanks to Vantage West Credit Union for their commitment in helping the community. We're talking about a very unique town hall that's taking place across the border in Hermosillo coming up on October 3rd and 4th. We're joined on the phone by Patrick Welsh with Jennings Strauss Law Firm and Tara Jackson, the president of the Arizona Town Hall. Patrick, we talked a little bit about how this idea derived or was inspired from a previous town hall. What were some of the big issues that came out of that discussion that seemed so powerful or so necessary that you said, hey, wait a minute, we need a special town hall to be able to address this and have our friends, our neighbors from Sonora join in the discussion?
Well, I think the impetus for the Arizona-Mexico town hall in bringing it to Sonora was the idea that this relationship is all-encompassing. I mean, your neighbors share culture, you share family ties, you share cultural ties, you share culinary ties, as we talked about a minute ago. But the economic impact certainly was the driving force. When you have a relationship on the magnitude that we've talked about earlier in the show, it just was a no-brainer. People said, you know, we had a certain number of Sonorans that were at the 2016 Main Town Hall event, which was in Tucson, and we were saying to each other, man, we need to get a broader perspective, a broader group of people. If this is really truly a bilateral relationship, why is not all of the stakeholders, all of the key players on both sides of the border at the table? And you know, that was really the impetus to bring it down there. I mean, from my personal perspective, you know, one of the reasons that I was so excited about this event and trying to help Tara and her town hall to Mexico is, you know, my wife's from Sonora, Mexico. I've got a bicultural family. My children are Mexican and U.S. citizens. So, you know, for me personally, it was, what can I do to prove the two communities that are such a big importance in my family's life, too?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because my experience years ago, I was involved with a trade mission that was scheduled to go to Guadalajara. And, oh gosh, about 2 weeks before the mission was to take place, there was this huge explosion there in Guadalajara and a lot of folks pulled out of our trade mission. They were just concerned. They didn't know what was going on. But there was a small group of us who said, no, you know, this is important. And in that culture, the importance of being there, of being present and shaking hands and breaking bread and looking across to the table at each other, it makes a huge difference when you're doing business in Mexico or with Mexican companies. So I got to congratulate you on doing this event down in Hermosillo. Plus the food trucks is a good idea. I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Tara.
If I could add to a couple of items, both with your last question to Patrick and the comments you made, from my perspective as someone who just looks at these issues on a statewide issue in Arizona, one of the things I learned from that statewide town hall is, number one, how valuable and important our relationship is with Mexico, not only culturally, but since you're an economic developer, business. And so much of the story about Mexico, the headlines seem to focus on the negative aspects of our border friends, not the positive aspects. So if you're an economic developer or a business person, that's as if the only thing you focus on with Metro Phoenix is the crime statistics, without focusing on all the assets and benefits and the opportunities that exist. So the realization of the participants of Arizona is that Arizonans are not getting the story correct in telling the full story. For example, one of the items that I learned down in Hermosillo by happenstance is running into an American businessman who said, this is the best place to get employees for my telemarketing business firm because they tend to speak English. I can come down here pretty regularly. Also, we have economic developers that make this trip down to Mexico. They build those relationships that are so much more important in the Mexican culture and then create economic opportunities for their towns and cities in Arizona, whether it's Cottonwood, where those things have happened, or Flagstaff, where, again, they're looking at what are the business opportunities of looking at the full relationship and better understanding the benefits of having a business relationship with Mexicans and specifically our Sonoran neighbors.
Yeah, and Patrick, you want to expound on that? I'm sorry, I cut you off before when you're talking about the importance of that personal relationship, particularly when doing business in Mexico.
Well, you know, from my perspective, you know, I always counsel my clients that are looking to go into Mexico about the cultural business environment in Mexico. And, you know, you and Tara hit it on the head. Business happens differently in Mexico than it happens in the United States. You know, I have said at the Arizona-Mexico Commission Summit at the last June event that we had, you know, the importance of a good carne asada. And then I'm sure you've had a good carne asada yourself. But that experience amplifies what Mexican business culture is all about in terms of the importance of breaking bread, as you said. In that case, it's having a really good, you know, ribeye taco with a salsa that, you know, all the people that are at the party are, you know, around the grill commenting about, oh, you got to put this much salt on it, or you can't put the salt on it until you flip the meat, or this is how, what type of peppers you've got to put in your salsa. Those types of bonding relationships is where business happens in Mexico, and I just think you can't underscore that environment or that culture enough when you're looking to go down there. And I tell people, boots on the ground. You need to be there watching your business, working with your partners, because if you don't, things don't happen organically down there like they do up here with, hey, I want to sign a contract, let's get going.
Bingo, Patrick, you're spot on. But can we just not talk about food anymore? I didn't have breakfast, and you're killing me over here, brother. But you're right. I mean, advice is, okay, go slow. Take your normal doing business, and it's not so bad for Tucsonans because we're culturally we're a little bit closer. But let's say, you know, somebody from Chicago or New York, you're right. You know, you don't want to push the contract right away. Slow down, get to know your potential business partner there, and frankly, you're going to have a good time doing it, and that's going to lead to a longer lasting relationship, I believe, because you've got that personal relationship. Tara, once again, remind us how folks can get involved and how they can register for this event.
The registration's live on our website, aztownhall.org. If you Google Arizona Town Hall, it tends to be the first thing that comes up. Simply go to upcoming events. Alternatively, you can call our office at 602-252-9600, and we'll get you registered.
I tell you, one of the things I loved when in reading your press release about this was the fact that one of the specific objectives of this meeting is to update, maybe is a better word, but to develop a digital cross-border guide. There is such a document that exists, but my understanding is it's kind of got some whiskers on it. I mean, it's what, 1994 vintage, and things have changed un poquito since then.
That's certainly true, Ben. That book was originally published by collaborators at the Arizona-Mexico Commission, and you know, the Arizona-Mexico Commission is one of our partner sponsors this year, and you know, we really appreciate the contributions that they've made to support the event. The guidebook, like you said, 1994. You know, that's, you know, NAFTA, pre-NAFTA times. We're now on the eve of hopefully getting the USMCA or NAFTA 2.0, as it's called, hopefully on the floor for a vote. Mexico immediately passed it. I suspect Canada will follow suit if we're successful in getting a vote on the floor in the U.S. And, you know, I think that's a really important thing in terms of being able to have resources available to Arizonans and Sonorans to help promote cross-border trade and investment, particularly on the eve of a momentous trade agreement, you know, being negotiated and hopefully passed.
You're spot on, and I'll tell you, I want to come back to what Tara said before. You know, the one thing I love about business is it's blind. I mean, business is business, and that's it. That should be the end of the discussion. So I'm excited you're doing this. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Tara, explain to us, for somebody who are, you know, businesses here who are hearing it for the first time, who haven't necessarily engaged in international trade and maybe just be waking up to, hey, you know, I've got this great trading partner 50 miles south of Tucson. How do I start? What would you say, Tara, would be their best way to kind of get started researching and getting involved in this, in addition to attending your town hall?
Well, both you and Patrick spoke about the importance of building relationships. So that's number one. If it can't be by attending the town hall in Hermosillo, which, because of the cross conversations we have, we put you in groups that are mixed up, then it might be by working with the Arizona-Mexico Commission, by working with other people who are actively engaged in cross-border business, as well as those who have experience and contacts down there who can help navigate the way. Our hope is also that the outcome of this particular meeting, along with the actions that will be taken afterwards, will help update this manual to make it easier for people to understand how to do business. One thing I thought of when you said 1994, my recollection is that that's prior to the wide use of the internet. Imagine that. I can't even imagine doing business without the internet before. So using those resources once they're developed, working with people who have established relationships and the knowledge is the best way to get started.
One real quick practical question for folks who haven't crossed the border in the wild. Just what are the logistics of they need to get this done when they go down to Hermosillo and to be sure they can get back to the United States?
We have detailed information on our website. There are specific things that you should know to make that go easier. Patrick, I don't know if you want to add any other details other than what they can find on our website.
Well, you know, one of the important things about Arizona in particular with travel to Sonora is a free zone. So you can travel freely within Sonora all the way up to an area just south of Hermosillo in the area of Empalme, Guaymas. So,
okay. Patrick and Tara, thank you so much. We've got to go to a hard break here for the news. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to the Creative City Show. Folks, is your host Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Zach Yenser. This segment is sponsored in part by Summers Financial Management. Whether you're a 20-something in the first part of your career, a baby boomer working on retirement, or already retired and figuring out ways to invest and manage the wealth you've built, money management can be scary, but it doesn't have to be. The team at Summers Financial Management will help design a strategy that is right for you to create financial independence, passive income, and smart planning for the future. Give Adam and the team a call at 520-328-8279. Speaking of give us a call, our live line is open. If you'd like to comment or provide some feedback, give us a call, 520-790-2040. In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk about real estate development from a community perspective. We're joined by Isaac Figueroa. He's the Chief Commercial Officer and Director of Real Estate Development for BFL Ventures. Isaac, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we're doing the standing thing. People,
yes.
See, you're taller than me, so it works, you know, works for me.
But yeah, it's a little difficult here, but as long as I can be close enough to the mic and everyone can hear me, that's all good.
Isaac, when people hear real estate, well, I should say when certain people hear real estate development, they get a certain picture in their head of, you know, we're going to go out and blade the desert.
Right.
And what's the song? Parking lot.
They pave paradise and
bingo.
Put up a parking lot. Yeah.
But today I want to focus on something that is a real challenge for our communities and other communities across the country and is part of the diverse portfolio of what BFL does. And that's the idea that trying to make sure that every Tucsonan can afford to have a good, safe rooftop over their heads. And when someone says affordable housing, it seems pretty straightforward, pretty simple, but it's not, is it?
No, it's not. In fact, the entire idea of what that means is something that's very frequently misconstrued, and there's just a huge amount of misconception about how development works and how the economics of it work. And what it really takes and what goes into it. So it's a very complex subject that really requires, a lot of education in some ways, where people need to kind of be educated on how really kind of basic economics works. And then that can give them a better idea of what are the solutions we need to find to help kind of solve this affordability problem. And it really just, it's a simple solution, but just requires some kind of fundamentals to understand. And the first of those fundamentals would be, you know, just the basic concept of supply and demand. You know, is supply of something goes down, the demand of it keeps going up. Typically, what happens is the prices go up of that supply. So, in order to help combat that, you don't try to control the prices, but rather you try to figure out what you can do to increase the supply. So in a subject like affordable housing or just housing in general, which is, it's almost to the point of a crisis that we're facing all across the country. There's some communities like LA, for example, in New York, where there's, potential of things like rent control, or other types of things that will actually just limit and limit developers from being able to build more housing. because they think that by trying to make them lower the prices that that's going to solve the problem, but it actually is in fact going to make it worse.
I tell you, you hit on a hot button for me, because I will tell you, I won't mention who, but there is a line on the campaign page of a candidate in this local city election, and I'll quote, inclusionary zoning that would require affordable rental and for sale units. Ample evidence has shown that rent control does not, in fact, work and actually makes it worse for people. So can
Absolutely.
We just say rent control, bad, no.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's not, like you said, ample evidence. It's not, you know, controvertible. It's not a an debatable topic. It's been proven over and over, you know, with scientifically, basically, that it does not work. It's actually going to make the problem worse. If anything, a solution would be lowering impact fees, doing things to make it easier for developers to build more supply.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. And just to clarify, for the context of today's discussion, I'd like to talk about, when we say affordable housing, I'm talking about both home ownership as well as affordable rental properties, because the demographic changes we're seeing in our communities and our society, I think, is also plays a role in that supply side of the curve. But let's talk about, so what goes into, whether it's single family housing or apartments, as a developer, as an investor in this, explain a Reader's Digest version for our listeners so they understand land acquisition costs,
right,
availability of land, the regulatory factors,
right,
that you talk about that slowly increase the cost of that home, which knocks certain people out of the affordability category at that level.
Right, right. So, I mean, a basic breakdown of how development works as far as in a nutshell would be, you know, you identify land that's either not developed or is developed into something that could be better used in a different way. And then you go through acquisition, entitlements, and then construction. And then after that, you know, hopefully stabilization. And so all those things are high risk, and they also require a lot of money. So a lot of capital up front, because you're essentially taking kind of a gamble on whether or not that development's going to work.
Isaac, for people who aren't in the industry, could you just sort of expound on the word entitlements? Explain to them what that means.
Yeah,
I think folks might get an idea based on that word that is not
necessarily accurate. Sure, sure. Yeah. So by entitlements, we're talking about zoning, things like zoning use, restrictions, different types of things that'll affect what you can actually build there. So in the development world and commercial real estate world, we just kind of label that as entitlements, but it's just an umbrella that covers all the different things that you're going to come upon when you're trying to change a use of a or improve the use of a specific type of land. So, and as I said, all those things, you know, cost money. On top of that, you have all these fees that you have to pay to the city to do that thing. There's something called impact fees, where it's basically going to impact the community. So you got to pay some kind of fee just to do it. And it's fine. The concept behind it's great, because, you know, you're going to be, that money goes back to the community. However, when they do it to a point where it really then hinders and completely ruins the economics of a deal, what ends up happening is that then a developer's like, well, this deal's not feasible, so I'm not going to do it. And then when you stop enough projects happening, what ends up happening is that there's not enough supply. And when there's not enough supply and there's more demand, people are going to compete and the prices will go up.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because this is something that, you know, this show is about educating folks. And if you'd like to comment, folks, give us a call on the live line, 520-790-2040. But I was in a meeting relatively recently where we were talking about a different regulatory subject matter.
Right.
And it was sign code.
Yeah.
Sign code. It's signs. Who cares?
It's been cost prohibitive.
Well, but bingo. And that was the explanation that was given to the government official sitting on the other side of the table. Says, look, we take all this stuff and we add it up and we plug the numbers in. And at some point, it may not seem like much to you, but at some point, it could be a deal breaker. Because
right.
if it doesn't pencil out, guess what? We don't build.
Right,
and
absolutely.
You don't get your housing, you don't get your fees, and your residents don't get what they need on the supply side, which
right.
is supposed to be our goal.
Yeah, what appears to be what people think is going to somehow protect them or help them, actually, you know, when you really kind of trace it through, what it ends up doing is it actually ends up just negatively impacting our community. And we've seen it happen over the, you know, past 30 years, where other communities, you know, in Arizona or in other, you know, similar sized cities in different states are, you know, making progress that we're just not seeing. And so, you know, it's a really tough subject because, you know, if you don't know, you don't know what you don't know. So if you're in a position where, you know, trying to change the sign code because you think it's protecting you, nobody has the intent to do it.
Right.
But that's the unfortunate thing is that, you know, people are doing it without realizing what they're doing.
Unintended consequences.
Exactly.
So I know, Isaac, you weren't expecting a quiz, but Zach told me you're an awfully sharp dude. So let me give you a quiz real quick to help highlight the situation. The National Low Income Housing Coalition did a study. Persons earning minimum wage working 40 hours a week can afford a two-bedroom apartment in how many U.S. counties? Don't worry about it. It's a trick question.
Okay.
The answer is zero.
Zero. Okay.
None.
I was going to say two, three. I don't know.
Well, no. And that's why I wanted to use it, because sometimes using the most extreme example gets people's attention.
Sure.
And particularly when we talk about the market in Tucson, there's all these issues. There's inventory. There's regulation.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have the challenge, particularly in the Tucson city limits, of, you know, 20% or whatever it is now of our residents are below the poverty level.
Right.
So as a developer, as you're trying to build something that, let's get it straight. I mean, your point is your goal is to make money. That's how you stay in business and keep
building. Well, we have to make a living, right?
Sure, sure.
It's what we do. Everybody has their job. This is our job. And so in order to do it, we have to be able to make money. We have to be able to make a profit.
What has been your experience in Tucson in particular as to how that has created an extra complication or a wrinkle when you're building affordable housing in a community that is so poor?
Well, I mean, in Tucson specifically, and you know, we do developments all over Arizona, you know, and in Phoenix. In fact, a majority of our work is up in Phoenix, and Tucson's my home. I love Tucson. It's my community, and we're headquartered in Tucson, and we're a Tucson company, even if we're doing a lot in Phoenix. But one of the difficulties with Tucson has always been that there's just a substantial amount more regulations, and impact fees are actually, in fact, there's a new, I think, ordinance coming on where impact fees are going to be substantially increased, and it's really actually going to cripple a lot of potential developments that a lot of different developers have in the pipeline. Will basically have to just completely, if these impacts increase the way they're trying to propose them to.
Isaac, I feel bad for giving you a quiz unexpectedly, so I'm going to do this. Tell you what, when we come back from the break, I'm going to make you king for a day.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you, if you had ultimate power, what would you like to see to help make housing more affordable in Tucson?
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Buehler-Garcia, guest host sitting in for Zach Yenser. Give us a call, 520-790-2040, right here, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia. Sitting in for your normal host, Zach Yenser, here on the Creative City Show. This segment is sponsored in part by HR Resolve, a local company designed to help other local small and mid-sized businesses by providing them the human resources services that'll make their team feel like they're being taken care of by a big company. Taking care of your team is critical, but figuring out things like payroll and health care can feel like a complicated step to business growth and health. It doesn't have to be. Call Shanae and the team at HR Resolve, 520-867-8384 to start the conversation. We're talking about affordable housing, particularly development on a more broader basis here. I'm joined by Isaac Figueroa. He's the Chief Commercial Officer and Director of Real Estate Development for BFL Ventures. Isaac, I sort of teased before the break because they're you know, if you think about this as an algebraic formula, there's just a lot of X's and Y's and Z's. There's a lot of factors on both sides of the equation. What if you were king for a day?
Mm-hmm.
And your mission was to create more affordable housing in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
What would be some of the simple policy recommendations you would implement with a wave of your wand in order to get it done?
That's a great question. And so here's two concrete examples of what I think could help absolutely tremendously. One, you know, impact fees. We talked about that earlier. Impact fees, if too high, can be an absolute hindrance. Keeping the impact fees at a reasonable rate, because I do think the purpose or the idea behind them is a noble one. If we made impact fees go directly to the neighborhoods in which the development was happening, that would then give incentive for the neighborhoods to want to cooperate more. So if I'm going to build one in, you know, the X neighborhood, I want to build maybe an affordable housing or just any kind of development whatsoever. If they know that the impact fees that I'm going to build in that neighborhood are then going to go towards improving that neighborhood's infrastructure or anything else, just building it up, I think that they would be more likely to want to welcome more development. And I think most neighborhoods around Tucson would then want to encourage development, which then would really kind of enrich our landscape, as well as, you know, it can lead to a number of things. So that's one. Another thing specifically with affordable housing would be any kind of incentives, such as the GPLET, which for those who don't know, the GPLET is it's a discount and tax that the government offers specifically within certain overlays. And right now it's in the downtown overlay, where they get a tax deferment for I think about 8 years, because the incentive is because they're going to develop something that's going to then increase the sales tax base, which then they end up getting more money than if it were to just sit there and be empty. If they were to extend something like a GPLET to affordable housing, that would incentivize developers to want to build more affordable housing, and then would increase the supply and help kind of give some relief on that. I mean, the biggest thing about the GPLET too, that's a big misconception that people don't understand, is that they think that, oh, we're just giving a tax break and we're lining developers' pockets. But here's the thing. If you have an empty lot or an empty building that's not sitting there and doing anything, and let's just say it's $50,000 a year in tax, right? But then you want to build a really great project that is then going to give you, $500,000 in tax. But the GPLET will then allow that developer to not have to pay that for a certain amount of time. The GPLET still has, I think, 10% of it, or a certain percent of it still gets paid because it goes to TUSD. Yeah. And they will still pay that. So even though they're not paying the rest of it, so even when they do that development, they'll then still have a significant amount more, where $50,000 or more will then go to TUSD, whereas if it just stays there empty, only $5,000 of it's going to TUSD.
Well, and it comes back to what you mentioned early on in the interview, is the importance of a basic economics course.
Yep.
I mean, to some extent, this is somewhat of an opportunity cost argument, and it's saying, look, you've got 10 vacant acres, mm-hmm. and make the impact fee a dollar, make it $100,000. If nothing gets built,
right,
how much do you make?
Nothing.
Zero.
Exactly.
Right. It's that trick question again.
Yeah.
So, Isaac, talk a little bit about the other factors here, and I think this is also an issue in Tucson as a very spread out community, where we're starting to see sort of this donut hole effect now. As downtown emerges and becomes more successful, it also becomes more expensive.
Right.
And so working class folks are finding themselves being pushed and further mm-hmm. out. I mean, mm-hmm. some of the most affordable, nice housing in our region right now is down in Sahuarita.
Right.
Well, but if you work at Raytheon's maybe not so bad, but let's say if you work downtown, there's that added transportation cost.
Absolutely.
That you have to calculate back into affordability, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of a direct result of this hindrance on development, right? Where we, a lot of times had a lot of proposed infill, developments where we're trying to fill inside of our, you know, the city. And it's this kind of dichotomy where they don't want people going out and destroying the desert, but they also, in the city where it's already a city, they also don't want us building dense there. Where it's like, you know, technically, if you really wanted to conserve the desert, we should just be doing all of our, development infill. There's a lot of empty space just sitting in the middle that's not even considered really wilderness or anything anymore. We should be building on those spaces, or the low density buildings that are now not, you know, they're functionally obsolescent or whatever they are. We need to build on those. We need to build, you know, higher. We need to be able to fit more people and create more walkable environments and more walkable communities where they don't have to worry about transportation. That's no longer an added cost. They can walk to work. They can walk to, you know, the store. They can do whatever they want. But in order to do that, we need to be able to actually build those things.
So on my regular show, my weekend show, I always reserve one dumb question for Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I have hundreds.
Right.
Because I'm not that bright, as you can tell. But let me ask you, you just inspired me for Ben's dumb question in this context. My home is approaching 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a basement.
Right.
It's wonderful. Why don't we, I get density, let's build up,
mm-hmm.
but why don't we build down more?
Well, traditionally the issue with Arizona in general and why you don't see a lot of houses with basements is mainly because of the caliche.
But
that just honestly it comes down to because, you know, when you build a lot of buildings and a lot of dense buildings, you want to have, you want to go down anyways for parking, right? We will if we have to, but it's very expensive. It's, you know, with the caliche is extremely expensive.
Boy, I must have inspired something. I think you got a caller here.
Oh, great.
But, I'm sorry. If they could do it back in the 20s when they built my house,
right.
I'm thinking we could do it now. So, Bob, what do we got there? He's chuckling. Must be a good call. Well, hold on for a second. We've only got about 3 minutes left. What else, before we take the caller, Isaac, what else can you share with folks or where can they go to learn more about this subject?
That's a good question, actually.
Think about that.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and go to Carl. Carl called the Creative City Show. Carl, what's your question or comment, sir?
Okay, you're talking about walking to work or walking to shopping. Hey, this is Tucson. It's 100 degrees. Are you serious?
Well, I mean, that's just one example of many as far as, you know, alternatives for affordable housing.
Carl, I agree with you. Thanks for your call. Thanks for listening to the Creative City Show. But he's right. This came up in the context of the complete streets. And
right.
That's a factor in Tucson.
Yeah.
It's 110 degrees out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're coming in to develop from, I don't know, Portland or someplace, mm-hmm. that makes a difference. It's
sure.
something you've got to factor into this
yeah.
discussion.
I mean, it's a little bit besides the point. I understand that. And I mean, I know the Sunshine Mile, they're trying to focus all on walkability. And it's like nobody's going to be walking down Broadway. You know, parking is extremely important because of that. But, he has a point there that I agree with, but that was kind of besides the point that I was trying to make as far as needing density.
Okay, we opened the floodgates here. Al, I tell you, Al, we've got 1 minute, sir, so we'd love to hear what you have to say, but please be brief.
My thing is about the density. I think there's parts in this neighborhood, in this town, along First Avenue, along Stone, the density is way too thick and there's way too many people, and all it does is make crime. And it makes bad things and the rents go down. What do you think of that? I mean, it's nice out in, you know, the suburbs and stuff, but what about the areas of density is so packed that all it does is bring bad things?
No, crime is not a result of density. Crime is a result of lack of police, lack of education, lack of resources. It has nothing to do with density. I mean, it's New York is one of the densest places, and at one point it was crime-ridden, and now it's not. It has nothing to do with density, and crime are not correlated.
And Carl, thanks for your call to the Creative City Show. Just about a minute left, Isaac, but he brings up a very good point. When you just even say the words affordable housing, people get this image in their mind.
Right.
And right away, some folks default to a position where those may not be the best neighbors in the world.
Sure.
NIMBYism in Tucson is still a great challenge.
Absolutely.
But, I would hope that folks out there understand what's good for the community as a whole is good for all of us.
Absolutely.
And so I appreciate your time coming on here and sharing your thoughts with us. Any other things you'd like to throw out there to stir more controversy?
No, I mean, just, you know, if anybody wants to give me a call, you can look me up. I'm happy to talk to anybody about any questions they have. It's actually a more in-depth subject than most people think. And usually after having a good conversation and telling people more about it, people end up walking away with a lot more educated kind of perspective.
Spot on. And that's what we're about here at the Creative City Show is educating folks.
Absolutely.
This has been your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Appreciate you tuning in. You can find here Zach here every weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. Get the podcast, KVOI.com, here at 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Until next time, folks, take care of yourself.